Everything Must Go is the new album from Steely Dan, and we're having a one-hour sale, a conversation with Steely Dan. That song was Blues Beach. First, what in the world is a paranymphic glider?
See, this is why we don't like to give the reviewers printed copies of the lyrics, because that might have just slid by, although now that I think about it, people who've listened have asked that question. Paranymphic glider is an imaginary vehicle that you would take an imaginary girl on an imaginary date.
Particularly hot date.
A very hot imaginary date.
Are they for sale on your website? Or
We have a prototype, but they'll be available soon.
There was a time when Steely Dan, like some of the characters in the song we just heard, Blues Beach, was early resigned. And then there were a series of events that ultimately led to Steely Dan rearing its head again. Donald, you played some Steely tunes on the New York Rock and Soul Review. And Walter, you produced Comicariad, Donald's solo album.
That's right.
Then you joined the New York Rock and Soul Review on the road.
That's right.
And then, Donald, you produced Walter's solo album, 11 Tracks of
That's
Whack.
Correct. Well, co-produced, yeah.
So, surprisingly enough, when the name Steely Dan was used again, it was for a concert tour and not for an album, for the first time in 94, and you guys hadn't played on the road for 20 years. How did it happen that when Steely Dan resumed, it was on the road?
No one would have predicted that, I don't think, but as it happened, Donald had finished the Comicariad album. He had done the Rock and Soul review for a couple years, and I had done a few, and we wanted to promote his record, and also we had seen the reception and the enthusiasm that was there for us to do Steely Dan songs, and so we just put two and two together. Plus, we had a manager at that time that felt that he could show us, if we did a little touring, that it was not going to be the incredible series of snafus and screw-ups that our tours were in the 70s. So he was right, and out we went.
When you started playing concerts, and there were tours in 1994, 95, 96, did you approach them with more of an improvisational slant, or were you just trying to reproduce the records faithfully?
I don't think we were ever interested in really reproducing recordings. I think... although, on the other hand, I think when we listened to the old records, we noticed that some of the arrangements were actually quite good and quite complete and worked well on stage. Things that we could expand for the stage, or things that were hits that were kind of boring to play after a while, we try to change the arrangement once in a while, try to kick them up a little bit, and maybe if we have a soloist who's working with us who we think might fit in really good on a certain song, we can expand the arrangement to include some improvisation, etc.
How is your music appreciated differently in, say, Japan, where there's a language barrier?
Of course, we don't really know exactly what they make of the parts that don't make sense to them, but we know that they're big fans, and that they like the music, and that they get the they're very attentive to the songs. There are probably things in our songs that don't translate that well, but we've had that same problem with even with English-speaking people, now that I think about it. So
there were so many years when Steely Dan was an insular institution. And now there's concert tours, and the internet gives you more exchange with your audience. Who are these people listening to Steely Dan?
That's a good question. Who are these people? These are the people who made this country great.
They're good, the sons and daughters of the pioneers.
You know.
We don't know, see people at shows, and we meet people from at shows or on the street or something like that. And... generally speaking, a very likable, affable bunch of people. Obviously, they have excellent taste in music.
I think we actually have the most intelligent fans. Possibly possibly in the area of Psychosis, we're probably also equal with some other bands who are known for that. But
well, you know what? I've found that the real hardcore Psychotics are not faithful to one band or another. They switch around depending on who, you know, happens to pop up on their radar screen.
Folks are listening to your songs, and there are various interpretations, as we mentioned earlier. Do you have any favorite misinterpretations that were so far off you could share them without shattering anyone's illusions?
Well, I remember once, and this is actually concerning a song that was on my solo album, The Nightfly. It's called IGY, and the chorus was, "What a beautiful world this will be, what a glorious time to be free." And I had calls from several corporations who wanted to use the song in their commercials. I guess what they didn't realize was that the chorus was meant to be, you know, ironic, and was actually sort of stating the opposite of what it seemed to be saying. So that was one thing I can recall.
Can you remember any favorite misinterpretations,
Walter? Well, I seem to remember that somebody thought that the line, "the sparkle of your china," in Bodhisattva, actually said something like, "the spark of your vagina."
Well, there's a song we're about to hear called God Whacker that people will interpret in various ways, but it seems to be obviously about terrorism and the post 9/11 bring them back dead or alive mentality, the start of the end of history. But there's a lot of different ways we can go with this song. Since Steely Dan has been known to wax satirical a time or two, have you ever pondered the role of satire in society, especially during times like now?
Well, yeah, it seems like, you know, what we're going through now tends to, as if there was some kind of standing gag order in place that you couldn't be funny or sarcastic, you know, and, you know, we're trying to ignore that. But it is difficult.
It's actually when they say standing gag order, they mean that there has to be an ongoing series of gags.
Yeah, that's what the way they're trying to tell us. That's how we're taking it.
That's how we look at it. Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of what's going on now is beyond satire. It's already really in the realm of satire as it's unfolding, you know, and can't really be satirized because it's already so ridiculous.